Here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you today. We have a lot on tap on the show today. Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times will be talking about the Bears and the upcoming game against Seattle and what happened against Green Bay at Lambeau Field on Sunday. We'll be talking with John Poulter, our professor of sports. It is heating up in the NL Central, the Brewers and the Cubs and the Cardinals. So we'll be talking baseball later in the program. Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting will join us in our next segment. He, of course, covers the Bears in Chicago, and we have some cuts from the Bears, the players and coaches, and he will be at the game coming up against the Seahawks this week, so we'll talk to him and what the status is with the Bears in Chicago. And myself, I will talk about the Packers in this segment and their big win against the Bears on Sunday Night Football national television. So that's what's coming up on the program. This is about our 26th year of doing this thing. It's been a long time. We started in 1993. But if you listen to the program as we go, you'll realize that things don't necessarily get better with age. Okay, well, the Packers and the Bears on Sunday night. Green Bay down 20-0. Aaron Rodgers goes out with a knee injury. DeShone Kizer, the backup quarterback for Green Bay, comes in. Fumbles, throws an interception, both of those going to the new Khalil Mack of the Chicago Bear defense, by the way. And they're down 20-0 at one point. And then the second half happens. The Packers come back, couple of touchdowns, field goal. They're going for the winning drive. And Aaron Rodgers throws the ball right into the breadbasket of Bears defensive back Corey Fuller. But Fuller drops the sure interception, and the Bears crack and burn, and the major debacle for Chicago begins, and the Packers go on to victory. And we're going to hear all about that from Mike McCarthy, Randall Cobb, Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, these two storied franchises, the Packers and the Bears, and now the Packers holding a slight edge in the overall series. Going back to the 1920s, Aaron Rodgers comes in like John Wayne out of the Old West movie on the hallowed grounds of Lambeau Field. And he orchestrates a comeback victory for the Packer faithful. And there it is, the Packers over the Bears, 24-3. Yes, very nice. Thank you. How exciting was that? Boy, I tell you, what a emotional roller coaster. Everybody in the, Packer diaspora is down at the end of the first half, sobbing, thinking that the Packers are going to lose to the Bears at Lambeau Field in the home opener, and Aaron Rodgers comes back in fantastic fashion. Well, anyway, let's listen to Aaron Rodgers on coming back in the second half with that knee injury, and then how the rest of his team helped prop up the Packers and get him to that win. Here's Aaron Rodgers.
Well, I'm really proud of our team. After it was decided I was going to come back, I knew it might give us a little jolt. We just had to play a lot better football in the second half, and we did. We put together four scoring drives. Guys making, G-Mo a contested catch, yards after the catch on, obviously, Devontae and Randall's. But the protection was really good, and obviously being more of a statue back there, I had to deal the ball on time and make sure we had guys getting open. I thought the protection was really good. And guys made plays. Ty made plays. Devontae made plays. Geronimo made plays. Randall made plays. And the line blocked well.
Randall Cobb takes in a pass, goes 75 yards for a touchdown. And that was really the big thing in the game. Randall Cobb, I think, underrated And when he gets the ball, he sure can do a lot of things with it. Here's Cobb talking about what do you do when you're down 20 to nothing. And he says the receiver core, that's what matters in Green Bay and to him. And here's what he said you do.
It was just executing. It was, making the plays that were there. In the receiver room, we talk about it all the time. The team goes as we go. And I feel like once we started making some plays, things started to roll for us. So we put all that pressure on ourselves in our room. And, you know, G-Mo made a heck of a catch in the end zone. Tate made some big plays and put us in position to have a chance to win.
Is there a better way to kind of start the 100th season of Packers football?
No, I don't think it any better than that. You know, having the Bears at home to open this year, Sunday night football, that's everything you want. It's a very exciting game, and we came out on top.
And, of course, DeShone Kizer comes in the game when Rodgers got injured, and we saw the story last year with Brett Hundley. And, Kizer had a couple of nice throws, and he threw for 55 yards, one interception, one fumble. But this backup quarterback position still worries me. So the press corps asked McCarthy earlier this week, what's he going to do about Kizer, and how is he going to get him to prepare for the upcoming games in the season? Here's McCarthy.
DeShone's new here. He's new to the offense. I mean, there's just a lot of fundamental things that we'll continue to work on with him. Number one is taking care of the football. I mean, I don't care what quarterback that plays in this league, and anybody that handles the ball has a responsibility to the football team to take care of the football. So that's first and foremost will be the focus and his opportunity to learn from his experience yesterday. So as far as what we do, we have a call sheet that's filled out just like any other, just like for Aaron. So that's a ready list that we went to when his opportunity came yesterday. So we'll continue to work in that mindset.
All right, in the game, Aaron Rodgers, 20 of 30, 286 yards, 3 touchdowns, a 130.7 passer rating. Jamal Williams, 57 yards on 15 carries. And the great Randall Cobb, 9 receptions, 142 yards, and a touchdown. So a big win for Green Bay. They've got Minnesota next. That's also at Lambeau Field. The Bears have Seattle with their home opener at Soldier Field. Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting will be in the press box at that game. That's the home opener there. And we'll talk about that and more coming back. You are listening to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave, a lot on tap. Hey, go.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Hughes, radio voice of the Chicago Cubs, and I would like to invite you to check out Baseball Voices, the Hall of Fame series. These commemorative audio tributes celebrate the greatest baseball announcers of all time. Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Bob Uecker, Harry Callis, Marty Brenneman, Red Barber, Milo Hamilton, and Dave Niehaus. These CDs are a collection of highlights, history, humorous stories, and Hall of Fame speeches. Available now at baseballvoices.com. That's baseballvoices.com.
The rewarding part is that we don't have to try and reach the broadest possible audience so that we can charge higher rates for advertising. We're not interested in who's hot and who's not. We're only interested in providing creative, intelligent, and even occasionally entertaining programs of quality.
Hi there, this is Chris Berman from ESPN. Hey, Packer Dave, I know you know about the frozen tundra, but about the rest of football, do a little boning up, eh?
I have been boning up, and I found that at the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field, even when down 20 to nothing, Aaron Rodgers can come in with one leg and beat the Bears. It was a great display of heroic proportions from the great MVP quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Now let's bring in from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, Steve Leventhal. Steve, how are you today?
Hey, now tell me you were not worried when you're going down 20 to nothing or 20 to 3.
Well, Steve, the game was in question. Aaron Rodgers' health was in question. But in the end, it all worked out for Green Bay. Not so well for Chicago, though.
You know, when I'm watching, because I did catch the tail end, and I, obviously later I went back and watched the game again, but just looking at the Bears rushing three players, Aaron Rodgers got all the time in the world. He's back there moving around, doing what he does best, even on a gimpy leg. And then, of course, it's not going to take long because he does have a really good core of receivers. They get open, he makes the completion, and boom, end of story.
Okay, well, we're going to hear from Bears coach Matt Nagy. We're going to hear from quarterback Mitch Trubisky. And let's start with Nagy, Steve. After the game, I guess he wants to turn this into a positive experience the best that he can for the future for the Bears.
Yeah, talks about the sting of this loss. Here's coach Matt Nagy.
We got to really have that finish mentality. Can't talk about it. We got to do it, everybody included. Our guys need to understand that close isn't good enough. Which they will. They know that, and they understand it's a long season. Nobody wanted this game more than we did, and so it definitely hurts. Like I said last night, it stings. But we need to use this, and we need to go ahead and use this to get better. And if you have the negative, pessimistic approach to it, then that's all wrong. And we're not going to have that. We're not going to have it as coaches. We're not going to have it as players. We're going to learn from it. And that's my job as a head coach to make sure that they learn from it. And trust me, I'll be harder on myself more than anybody. So I've done that. I've looked at the film, all three phases, and I have a much clearer picture now today than I did last night.
And Mitch Trubisky is going to talk to us about the lack of execution down the stretch.
I think it was a little bit both. You always got to give credit to them for mixing it up. It's always tough week one with all the unscouted looks, and ultimately it falls on us with the execution. We just got to continue to stay aggressive and execute the plays. But we were moving the ball early, and we moved the ball throughout the game. We just weren't finishing in the red zone and finishing in critical times. So just got to go back to work this week and figure it out and go back to the film and see what mistakes were made. But it feels good when you're moving the ball, and obviously it feels bad when you're not. So we just got to go back to work.
Okay, Steve, now we've got the Seahawks and the Bears and the Packers and the Vikings this week. Let's hear from Coach Mike Zimmer. He caught part of the Aaron Rodgers act in week one.
I did just finish watching it, yeah. Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, the guy's unbelievable. I mean, there aren't enough superlatives to say about this guy. He's just amazing. Receivers did a great job as well. You know, I thought their offensive line blocked really well at the end. So, you know, we're going to have our hands full.
Of course, the Seattle Seahawks, coached by Pete Carroll, or like I like to call him, Petey Red Bull.
Your favorite
had a tough,
mine.
Tough outing last week against Denver. Here's Pete Carroll.
This is unfortunate today that we didn't find a way to get this win. It's been really hard for people to beat these guys here over the years in the opener, and I knew that going in. And saw us with the chance, you know, way late in the game, we're in it and with a chance to win. Even despite the things that had occurred early that kept us from being in better command of it. But so it's frustrating to not get that from them. And they did a good job, you know, to finish out the game, finish the game moving the ball and running the clock and all that. So you got to hand it to them. Broncos did a nice job.
Now, from the Chicago Sun-Times, we bring in Patrick Finley in an interview that you did, Steve, with him at Hallis Hall.
And one of the things that's going to be a theme of this, and he talks about it, is in reality, you know, Matt Nagy got outcoached by McCarthy in this game.
So here is Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times.
You know, when Matt Nagy talks about how long it takes to learn his offense, you know, what Alex Smith, he said, was 2.5 years when he was with the Chiefs, and Alex Smith had been in the league for 8 years. So I think it's silly to expect Trubisky to be strong right out of the gate, but he was. That first drive showed you kind of everything that this offense could be in terms of creativity, movement, the speed not only of the quarterback but of Tariq Cohen, Taylor Gabriel. So I think that's the ideal. And then you spent the rest of the game watching them struggle to get back to that. And some of that's on Trubisky, some of that's on Matt Nagy. But it was an interesting start, even if the finish wasn't what they expected.
How much possibly is it the Packer coaching staff just recognizing what's going on? And they always talk about the quote-unquote adjustments.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Matt Nagy was outcoached as the game went on. For all of the magic of that first drive, Mike Pettine made adjustments. You know, both Mitch and Nagy said it right after the game that on third and short, they expected the Packers to be in man, and the Packers were never in man. They were in zone, and the Bears ran the plays anyway, and they didn't work. So, yeah, some of that is, you know, Mike Pettine, you know, Mike McCarthy. Some of that is Matt Nagy coaching in his first game, and he'll get better the same way Mitch Trubisky is supposed to get better, at least.
Your impressions of Khalil Mack?
I'm not sure. I think the last time I saw somebody dominate a half the way that he did was Brian Urlacher against the Cardinals way back when. He didn't have the win to make it, I think, through the rest of the game in the Packers. You know, Rodgers getting hurt was probably the best thing to ever happen to their game plan, because they said, to heck with it, we're going to go three steps and get the ball out. And that really did limit what they were able to do with Khalil Mack.
And looking at the very, very end of the game, you know, they always joke about the only thing a prevent defense does is prevent you from winning. You know, was there any second guessing? You know, how did the team feel about, you know, what they could or could not have done down the stretch?
I think you need to tackle a receiver versus letting him carve through seven or eight guys for a 75-yard touchdown. I'm not sure that's a function of the defensive scheme as much as it is just taking people to the ground. You know, most of these guys haven't tackled in a long time. I mean, you know, when you talk about Nagy sitting guys in the preseason, part of that is defenders, right? And, you know, that's one game of tackling, you know, that they didn't have that might have helped them here. I'm sure they'll look back at the film and pick that thing apart. Also, you know, sometimes great players just flat out beat you. And I think that Aaron Rodgers did a lot of that, on especially in the fourth quarter. I mean, three touchdowns. I mean, good luck trying to stop him.
Okay, just and a quick thought on the Seattle game coming up.
I don't know if Seattle's good, and you know, I'm not. I don't know if the Bears are either, but I think that it's a good opportunity to make a statement, especially after a loss like this, with a young coach and with a young team. This thing can go one of two ways, and if it goes in the positive direction, that bodes well for the rest of the year. And if they lose or they come out flat, it might be a longer season than Bears fans had hoped for.
Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times. And, Steve, this is going to be a tough one for the Bears at Soldier Field with the Seahawks coming in at 0-1.
Yeah, but you know what? If Russell Wilson goes down, you know who's going to take his place?
Brett Hundley.
That's right. You know, and somebody else who may be motivated to do well in this game, you know, is Brandon Marshall, who was with the Broncos, the Jets, and the Bears. Now he's with Seattle. So my guess is that he's also got a little extra motivation in this game.
Now we go to the man in Arizona, originally from Wisconsin. You can hear him on the Sports Byline USA Network and 88.7, The Pulse in Phoenix, Arizona. He's Andy Dorf. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you for having me, Packer Dave. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Okay. You want to give Steve some guff about the Bears' performance and ultimate collapse on Sunday?
Well, you know, Steve, look, man, as far as I know, the Green Bay Packers are owned by the people, and Aaron Rodgers seems to own the Chicago Bears.
Owned by the people? The little villagers of Green Bay?
The whole state.
Purveyors of cheese, Miller Lite, and brats.
And a lot of bowling, too. Okay, let's move on.
Ice fishing, hunting.
To the game. And then we'll talk about the Vikings coming up.
Cows with calves. Cows with calves.
Should McCarthy send a third of his paycheck to Aaron Rodgers each week, Andy?
You know, that would be a wise decision. He makes McCarthy look good even when McCarthy makes really bad mistakes. And, you know, early in that football game, let's just kind of dissect it a little bit. The pass protection was awful, and that's why they were getting to Rodgers. And let's give Khalil Mack a lot of credit. I mean, wow, what an impact he had first time playing for the Chicago Bears. Obviously, he was a little winded, but when that guy's ready to play 100% of the snaps, the Chicago Bears have themselves one hell of a player right there.
Okay, exactly. Khalil Mack, a fumble recovery that he took right out of the arms of DeShone Kizer, and an interception on DeShone Kizer's part right to Khalil Mack. Lucky that wasn't run back for a score. But so the Packers, outside of Rodgers, not looking so good until the second half, and then the receiver core came around. You have to give credit to Allison, to Randall Cobb, to Devontae Adams. You didn't see much of Jimmy Graham, though, or the other tight ends. A little bit, but not much.
No, you're right. I mean, and I would think that Jimmy Graham would be a big target for him in the red zone. Obviously, those pass plays were a lot longer than being in the red zone. I mean, it was something like a 75-yard pass to Randall.
Yep.
To Randall Cobb, and then obviously the pass to Allison. I mean, honestly, I don't think I've ever seen a pass dropped in there any better than that one was. So Aaron Rodgers made plays on one leg. His receivers made plays for him. The second half was obviously a much different story than the first half, and thank God for Aaron Rodgers being able to get back out on that field and be the magic man that he was for the Green Bay Packers on Sunday night.
Well, you know how they always talk about the halftime adjustments, and I've heard coaches say, well, you know, by the time everybody gets in there and they take care of bodily functions and they regather, there's not a lot of time to make adjustments. Well, somehow Green Bay found the time to make some significant adjustments in this game.
No, I agree. Again, and it's about the pass protection, and you saw in the second half a lot of quick drops and getting rid of the ball very quickly was Aaron Rodgers. Only a few times did he have the ball in his hands for more than 5 seconds, and you could see that he couldn't move around very well. So I would think that pass protection is going to be a key moving forward for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Andy Dorf with us from the Sports Byline USA Network and 88.7 The Pulse in Phoenix. Andy, did you just hear Steve say when they get in there and take care of their bodily functions? Is there really a place for that on a show like this? Do you have to get that descriptive? You know, usually you talk about X's and O's and all of that. Do we really need to hear that, Andy?
I mean, this is a family show, Steve. Remember that, brother, okay?
Well, the Manson family. Yeah.
Well, every family has bodily functions. We don't have to talk about it on the show, okay?
Well, I could have said take a leak.
Okay. Well, every week I deal with this, Andy. The Minnesota Vikings coming up in Green Bay, big win for them at home over San Francisco last week. Their new quarterback, Kirk Cousins, looks pretty good in that game. Your thoughts on that game coming up?
Well, you're talking about another team that's absolutely loaded there in the Minnesota Vikings. Delvin Cook back for them in the backfield. And again, they had a pretty good running game without him last season. Very good wide receiver core. Diggs is tough, and obviously Thielen is one of the best, too. So it's going to be a tough task. But with that being said, there's one real bright spot that I took away from the Green Bay Packers-Chicago Bear game, and that secondary is much improved for the Green Bay Packers. And they're definitely going to have a test against the Minnesota Vikings. And truth be told, Kirk Cousins has to come in there and be better than Case Keenum. And the only way to be better than Case Keenum is to lead that team to a Super Bowl. So I think the bar is set extremely high for the Minnesota Vikings this year. We'll see how they respond all year to it. But game one, week one, they were able to hold off the San Francisco 49ers, who, in my humble opinion, didn't play that well. But they were still in that ball game late, had a chance, obviously, to go down and tie it. But an interception from Jimmy G spoiled that. So the truth of the matter is the Minnesota Vikings are a very good football team in every phase of guys.
All right, and I'm a big Stephon Diggs fan. That's for sure. He's a great receiver.
I was very impressed with Trubisky, and the guy has definitely made some progressions. The guy is going to be a good one. And you know, people were laughing at that pick by the Chicago Bears a couple years ago now. And the truth is if he winds up being a really good quarterback, then you know what? It doesn't matter that you moved up one spot or whatever it is to get him. You got the guy that you wanted. And truth be told, I like the progression that Mitchell Trubisky has made so far.
Well, I'm still a little leery of his accuracy, especially downfield. I mean, he's got no problem cutting those short 5 and 10 yard passes, but everything I saw in training camp and so far in practice, he still needs improvement. I mean, I like the guy because he's a Tar Heel, but you know, he needs some work.
All right, Andy, thanks very much for coming on, and you have a great remainder of your day. Coming up, our professor of sports, John Poulter from Toronto. The Brewers and the Cubs are in the midst of it. We're going to talk all about it coming back on the Sports Report.
Hi, this is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to try the new streaming radio app from Internet FM. It features 24 online radio stations playing nothing but rock and roll. No annoying pop-up ads, little or no commercial breaks, and best of all, no sign-up required. Simply download Internet FM from the Apple Store or Google Play, and it's ready to go. Just pick your favorite station and assign it to any of the 18 programmable buttons. That's the new Internet FM app on Apple or Google Play. Download it today.
Hey, Packer Dave, this is Bob Uecker, Mr. Baseball, and you know, when we think of cheeseheads in Wisconsin, your name immediately comes to mind. Not only cheesehead, but curdle cheese. When they talk about curdle cheese, letting it go sour, it's you, Dave, and we thank you for that, Packer Dave.
Letting it go sour? I'm as sharp as a tack. All right, I'm Packer Dave. It is the Sports Report. I'm with Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago. You know, and so you've got Bob Uecker, Milwaukee, Steve Leventhal, Chicago. Now let's go out to John Poulter, our professor of sports in Toronto. And, of course, out of the dozens of listeners that this program has.
Name any whenever, three.
Whenever we decide to actually post them or do them or get off our ass to produce a show. Right now, this is the big thing in the Milwaukee, Chicago, Wisconsin, Illinois area. The Brewers and the Cubs, John, and Milwaukee now, as we sit today, one game behind in the NL Central. The Cubs losing their grip on the first place situation there. So you're the expert. Your thoughts here on the Cubs, the Brewers, and the NL Central.
Well, it's become a much closer race than I think we would have thought of a month ago. I mean, the Brewers started out really well and were giving the Cubs a heck of a run for their money for most of the season. But about a month ago, Milwaukee looked like they were heading south, and they've righted the ship. They're playing extremely well right now, and that's a big series at Wrigley Field this week between the two teams. Milwaukee coming out on top last night. Cubs losers of three in a row right now after that rough weekend in the nation's capital. And all of a sudden, we've got ourselves a race in that division. All of a sudden, we've got both teams with 83 wins and the Cubs with 60 losses and Milwaukee with 62. So those two extra games that the Brewers have played and have been losses are games, of course, once in the loss column, you can't make up. So it's pretty important now for the Brewers to continue to win any head-to-head battles they have with the Cubs. But I've been impressed with what the Brewers have been able to do in terms of, I'm not going to say salvaging the season because they were never really right out of it, but I have to think that a month ago we probably thought Milwaukee's best days in the 2018 season might have already gone by, but they've picked up a few veterans at the trade deadline, and now for the pennant push, they're doing really, really well. It's a great story. I know that Milwaukee and Chicago is a huge sporting rivalry. I'm not going to say it's as big as Cubs, Cardinals, Yankees, Red Sox, or Toronto Maple Leafs, Montreal Canadiens, but I know there's a lot of pride in both of those cities. They're both great cities, very proud of their sports teams, so it's fun to watch, and as a neutral observer, I sit back and I watch those games and those standings with a great deal of interest.
Well, I am certainly not a neutral observer in this
no
one.
No kidding.
Hey, by the way, John, I forgot to say, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you?
Good. I'm great. How about you, Steve?
Oh, same as ever. Rare and ready to go.
Just kind of plodding along, aren't you?
Okay. Yes, I'm a plodder and a doer.
Did you think Milwaukee would do this well this year, John?
I had mixed feelings, Dave, to be very honest with you. I thought they'd made some good additions over the wintertime in terms of beefing up the outfield specifically. My biggest concern with the Brewers coming out of spring training was their starting pitching. And they've really pleasantly surprised me in terms of how they've been able to deal with that. And picking up Gio Gonzalez from the Nationals at the end of August, I think, is a great move. Yeah, he's a rental. Yes, they had to give up some prospects to get him, but clearly they were in need of that extra veteran arm in the starting rotation. So I've been pretty impressed with what the front office and field manager Craig Counsell has been able to do with this team. They've taken a mix of guys that came up through the Brewers system, added a couple of free agents and trades that they signed over the offseason, and then they've supplemented that in July, in the months of July and August at the two at the respective trade, I'm going to call them deadlines, but they're not really deadlines. They're just deadlines in terms of postseason eligibility. They've picked up some good veteran presence, albeit for short terms. I'm talking about guys like Scope and Moustakas and Gonzalez. And Scope from Baltimore. They picked up four guys that have been through those battles before. This is a team that I think is very well molded by the front office, very well handled by Craig Counsell on the field. He knew a lot of these guys before they came to the major leagues, having worked in the farm development department for the Brewers for several years after retiring as a player. It's, quote, a small market, so there's not a lot of money to be thrown around. They don't compete with the Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, and so on and so forth. I think they've done really, really well. And yeah, to answer your question, I'm surprised where they have come from, especially when you look at the high-profile teams, the Cubs and the Cardinals, that are in their division. So hats off to the Brewers. Nice to see a small market team hanging in there and giving the big boys a run for their money.
So John, I saw, I did catch the last three, four innings of the game on Monday night, and the Brewers brought in this reliever, Hader, I guess his name is. I swear it was the second coming of Kent Tekulve with that funky underarm, crazy delivery.
Yeah, he does look kind of odd, and Tekulve's a pretty good example, although, of course, Tekulve was right-handed, and maybe it just looks different because Hader is left-handed, but he was throwing some nasty stuff. I didn't see the game live, but I did see the highlights on MLB Network, and I think the six outs that he got, they were all well-deserved, and he does look a little strange, and he certainly gives a batter a much different look than what you would expect coming out of the bullpen, and also a much different look than what you had seen for the first six or seven innings of the ball game. So a nice change of pace. Whether he is as good as Tekulve long-term remains to be seen, but certainly what I've seen so far from him is pretty impressive.
All six of those outs were strikeouts.
Exactly. Yeah, no cheapies either.
All right, John Poulter with us, our professor of sports.
Easy for you to say.
From Toronto. You know, Steve, John is prepared, he's focused, he's articulate, he's factually accurate. John, can you teach some of these qualities to Steve one of these days?
I think of myself, you know, those progressive commercials with Flo and all that, and then they got the one guy who's kind of bumbling and stumbling, Jamie. That's me.
Okay, well, at least we're honest. Steve's got that part down.
Oh, yeah, I'll come clean.
All right, John, now let's look at the Cubs, though. Okay, Milwaukee 8-2 in their last 10 games. The Cubs 4-6. What are their problems?
I really don't know, and I guess Joe Maddon obviously doesn't know either. Like, to me, that's a much better team than a 4-6 record, losers of three in a row. They're struggling, and I don't really know why. They went through a spell in the last, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 weeks where I thought they were really starting to hit their stride. It's a talented team. It's a deep team. Yes, they've had a couple of injuries. I don't think their pitching staff is as deep as it has been the last 2 or 3 years, and we all know how much of a part pitching plays in the game of baseball. So that might be a part of it, but quite frankly, they didn't get off to the greatest of starts. They were below 500, a couple of games below 500, then they'd get to 500, a couple of games below, a couple of games over, back to 500, up until probably around the end of May, and then they started to click into gear a little bit. I think they realized that time was passing them by, and they'd better make hay while the sun shines, because there was a couple of good teams coming behind them. And I think the fact that the Cardinals have played so well since their managerial change, making that a three-team race as opposed to a two-team race,
right,
I think that's put a little bit of pressure on them as well.
Well, also think about the fact that the Cubs, if you look at the statistically pitching, I mean, they don't have anybody in the top 10 or 12 in ERA, which is so important in terms of, you know, winning games.
Exactly. And of course, Lester is their big horse, and he's been struggling lately. And, you know, I'm not going to say that he's going to win every time that he's out there, but Lester's the type of guy that you expect to stop those 3- and 4-game losing streaks. He's what's known as a stopper, and you know, we've seen many of them over the years. And generally, when you have a guy like that, you don't expect to lose 3 and 4 in a row. But for some reason or other, the Cubs have been doing it, and they've been finding odd ways to lose. And they lost 2 games in Washington, and I think it was on Saturday was the doubleheader, because I think Sunday was rained out.
Correct.
And that's a game that's going to have to be made up. So there's another travel day going back to Washington for a game, which, you know, obviously they didn't want to do, and that'll have to be made up on an off day. And I don't know if that has been decided when that's going to be, but I wouldn't have thought the way that the Nationals are playing this year that they would have taken the Cubs twice in the same day, but they did. And the Cubs just seem to find funny ways to lose, which is very un-Cub-like, very Joe Madden unlike him. So I don't think there's a real answer to that, Steve, other than the fact that it's probably a combination of things, and they'd better write that ship awfully quickly, because if the Brewers win the rest of this series, the Brewers are going to leave Chicago in first place, and I don't think that's anything that the Cubs would have thought of a month ago.
All right, John. Well, I would like to see the Brewers take the division and the Cubs and the Cardinals play in the wild card game, and now you'd have 3 teams from the NL Central in the playoffs. And
playoffs.
Yeah. I think that'd be a lot of fun, and I think it's a distinct possibility that 3 teams come from the NL Central for the playoffs.
Yeah, very strong possibility, Dave. But, you know, there's just the same possibility in the National League West. Arizona falling off the pace a little bit there. The Dodgers getting back into it. Colorado all of a sudden finding their speed level and playing really well. That's just as good a race in the National League West. And the interesting thing about all of these games in the National League, and this is what sort of sets it apart from the American League, because the 5 playoff teams in the American League, I think, are pretty well decided. All they're looking there at is what the final seeding is going to be. Every division in the National League has a pennant race, although Philadelphia and Atlanta are starting to get some distance between them. But, you know, there's 3 teams in the Central, there's 3 teams in the West, and 2 teams in the East that are all in the mix in terms of making the postseason. And there's a ton of games. I think there's 25 or 26 games between those 8 teams that are in the postseason run between now and the end of September. So, you know, we're talking, what, 2.5 weeks? That's going to be decided on the field, which is the way that it should be. And I'm not going to suggest the schedule maker knew what he was doing when he made up the schedule, but it certainly looks that way, the way that it's been drawn up on paper. Philadelphia and Atlanta, as an example, 3.5 games between the 2 teams. They've got 7 games remaining. Colorado and the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks all have a ton of games with each other. So Cubs and Cardinals, I think, meet at Wrigley Field the last 3 days of the season.
That should be good.
I think that could be for a postseason spot for the Cardinals. It could be for a division for the Cubs. So I don't think that's going to be anything like we normally would see at the end of the season, where it's just a question of showing up and playing out the string. I think those games could well mean something.
Yeah, the Dodgers and the Giants will finish the season, but before that, the Dodgers have a series in Phoenix against the Diamondbacks. So, exactly, that will be a fun one to watch down the stretch.
Yeah, actually, there's two. It's Colorado and Arizona that have 2 series. The Dodgers have a series with the Cardinals, a series with the Rockies, and a series with the Diamondbacks. The Rockies game is in Los Angeles. The St. Louis and Arizona series are road games for the Dodgers. All between the 13th and the 26th of September. So that's 13th. That's this coming Thursday. Dodgers 4 games in St. Louis, 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th. 3 games at home to the Rockies following that, and then 3 games in Phoenix against the Diamondbacks, 24th, 5th, and 6th. So no one's going to back into this, guys. I think whoever wins this, whatever division it's going to be, is going to be one on the field. Atlanta starting to distance themselves from Philadelphia. Philadelphia was rained out yesterday, I believe, lost to the Mets on Sunday, whereas the Diamondbacks, the Braves won against the Giants and the Diamondbacks those 2 games. So starting to spread it out a little bit. That's going to be interesting, but I think Philadelphia is kind of at the point now where they're hanging on. If we were to look at this a week from today, we might say there were 7 teams involved, not 8.
All right, John Poulter, our professor of sports I would like to see the Diamondbacks in the playoffs. I'd like to see the Brewers, the Cubs, and the Cardinals. Those are the teams I'd really like to see in there. A quick minute on soccer, Steve. I know you're jumping up and down.
Absolutely, because
a quick minute. Did you hear?
Okay, John. What are
John,
the big games
did you,
this
John,
weekend?
Did you hear? A quick minute.
Well, I think the biggest game this weekend is Spurs Liverpool. Liverpool in first place, along with Chelsea and Watford, all have 12 points. Spurs have 9 points. So, if Spurs can win that, they'll be tied at 12 as well. And Watford has a home game against Manchester United, and of course that's a big game for Manchester United because they're sitting in 10th place with 6 points, 2 wins, 2 losses. So it's important that United get back into that race. If they can win that and at 9 points, all of a sudden they're 3 points behind Watford. They're within striking distance of the top four. Watford's played really, really well. If you were to ask me what has been the surprise team so far in the season, I don't think there'd be any prizes if you guessed Watford, because they struggled most of last season. Historically, they've been a middle-of-the-table team. When they've gone up to the Premiership, they've played well in the Championship, but in the Premier League, they've generally been a middle-of-the-table team, sort of more bottom end of the middle than top of the middle. It's nice to see Watford doing well. It's not really a small market. I mean, it's suburban London, but you don't think of Watford as being one of the big teams. But again, they've done a very good job in putting that team together, and they've played well so far this season. Are they Leicester City from 3 or 4 years ago? Probably not, because there's a heck of a lot more competition, but it's certainly fun to see some new teams in there. And of course, Liverpool playing the best soccer in the league right now, sitting right at the top there at 4-0, Chelsea not far behind them. I'm looking forward to the next Liverpool-Chelsea game, because I think, I don't know when that is, I haven't checked the schedule, but I think if those two teams can maintain that kind of pace, it's going to be a lot of fun. Struggles at the bottom end with Newcastle, Burnley, and poor old West Ham not putting up a point yet this season. Newcastle and Burnley with 1 point each. Tough times for some of those teams, but overall, we're 4 weeks into the season, or 4 games into the season. Been pretty exciting soccer so far.
So, Dave, do you know who the celebrity owner of Watford is?
I don't even know where Watford. That's in England, right, John?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's in Hartfordshire, Dave.
We're way over a minute
on the suburb. It's on the outer suburbs of London. It's not part of Greater London itself, but it's fairly close. It's a lot of people would live in Hertfordshire and work in London.
Sir Elton John owns the Watford team, or owns a big chunk of it.
Well, he used to own all of it, Steve. I think he owns a small piece now. There's some foreign ownership there now, and I'm not quite sure who the foreign ownership is, but I don't think John's quite as involved as he used to be. I know he's still on the board of directors, and he's still thought of as being their big celebrity supporter, but for many years he did own that team 100% outright.
I haven't ever heard any Elton John song with Watford in it, so, you know.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
So, no, I haven't heard Watford.
Well,
any
Yellow
but
Brick
that's
Road,
okay.
And Watford wear yellow jerseys, so maybe there's a connection there, Steve.
I doubt it. Okay, but thanks, John. John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, you've been a big source of information on baseball and soccer. Thanks very much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, guys. Take care. We'll chat next time.
All right. And we want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can get the show at internetfm.com and kwwradio.com. So for Steve Leventhal in Chicago, for John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, for Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening. Take care. Have a great week. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless.
to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.